Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
College basketball is getting heated up, and nobody covers it better than Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. You can follow him on Twitter at TSN Mike. Happy New Year, Mike. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Nate. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I loved some of your Twitter activity yesterday because I feel the same way, so I'll allow you to vent about this. What a great system we have in college football where a team can theoretically be in the FBS subdivision, go undefeated, beat an Auburn team that Auburn team that beat both Georgia and Alabama, yet have zero chance or even be allowed to try to play for a national title. That's a great system, isn't it?
It's really ridiculous. And I'll be honest with you, the committee's performance in this particular year, rating Central Florida 12th with a perfect record against a solid league. It's not the best league. I mean, the American's not one of the top leagues, and I get that. But it's a solid league with good football teams. I mean, you saw that with Memphis in the Liberty Bowl. They didn't win the game, but you saw how hard they competed and how close they came. And to be able to beat that team twice was impressive, and to be able to go undefeated was impressive. And to be ranked 12th was disgraceful. It was absolutely showing no real comprehension of what it takes to be a successful football team. And I will say that I think that for the committee to rank them 12th was an abomination. It was ludicrous. Now, I'm not saying they belonged in the top four. I don't know that it meant anything. But when you hear people like me arguing for an 18 playoff, the people come back, well, they were 12th anyway. They wouldn't have gotten in. Well, I mean, that because that gives people another excuse to argue against what's just and what's right. And so that was ridiculous. But the system itself, you should have a system in which all of the teams that are capable of winning a national championship are involved in the pursuit of the national championship. And we clearly did not have that this year. Because if you have a team that – like Clemson loses to a 4-8 team, and then you make them your number one seed, well, it's apparent that you're not using the same process to evaluate all of the teams involved. I mean, in one case, you look at Clemson and they have the loss to a 4-8 team and then the number one seed. Oh, but they have a lot of quality victories. Okay, well then you put Alabama in. Why? Well, I don't really see any justification about Alabama being in the field other than they're named Alabama because they didn't have the quality victories that the other teams had. They had a very poor series of victories relative to the other teams, and yet people found a way to defend it. And at the end of the day, but Ohio State lost by a bunch of points at Iowa. That's the best case you can make for Alabama is that they didn't get beaten badly. I don't think that's a good enough case.
I'm in favor of eliminating all subjectivity from it whatsoever, and if you're a conference champ, you're in. And if you're not, you're not in. And I mean all the conference champs. And let's seed it. Let's play it that way. And get rid of the...
Well, it would be great, but I'm not going to presuppose that we ever go there, right? Because the college football powers have made it clear that they're not going in that direction.
Right.
That they're not interested in that, or they wouldn't have started at four teams with the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
They would have gone to a more inclusive and comprehensive system. But I do think we can get to a point where either at six or eight, I believe eight's the right number because, again, we're not talking about equivalent schedules. Everybody doesn't even play close to the same schedule in college football.
Right.
So does Alabama belong in the field at eight? Yeah, probably. Because, at the end of the day, they're 11-1, and they did it in a really good league. And so, okay, yeah, they probably belong in the field. But the first people that you have to take care of are the five conference champions and then the best of the other five leagues.
Yep.
Those six teams have to be in the tournament. And then if you want to go to eight, which I believe they should, then you could add in either Penn State or obviously Alabama, and then either Penn State or Wisconsin or whomever else. But you can't continue to masquerade this as a legitimate championship. I'm a firm believer that college football is yet to have a true national champion, and until they get everybody in the tournament that can conceivably win it, then they won't have that.
Amen, brother. Amen. I 100% agree. Now let's move to college basketball. And on Saturday, I had a great time watching college basketball. I mean, I was in. The Duke versus Florida State game was compelling and fun to watch, and it was going on at the same time as the Oklahoma-TCU game, which was a fantastic game and went down to the wire. Arizona State were facing off against one another, which was a good game. And then I saw the number one team in the country, Villanova, get beaten pretty soundly by Butler. It was just a great day, Mike. Tell me maybe what stood out to you the most over the weekend. What was maybe the number one story for you over the weekend?
Well, you know, I think it was Trae Young continuing to play at a really remarkable level. And to do it against a team that hadn't lost and to be able to perform in a game that tight, one of his first few conference games, he was really impressive. And that continues to be one of the more amazing things to watch in college basketball. The freedom that he is allowed to play with is amazing, and it's great to see that again. I think we got into a period where of this egalitarian basketball, and I'm not against everybody getting a chance to touch the ball, but you know, when I grew up, this is a while ago. I mean, the best players took the most shots. I mean, that's the way the game went. And I'm not saying that what Oklahoma is doing with Trey is the only way to play. But if you've got a guy like that and you don't let him play like that, you're taking the best weapon out of your own hands. He is basically allowed to dictate what he thinks is best on the floor. And I think that's, you know, to see a freshman averaging 18 plus shots a game, I mean, that's not normal. But it's what should happen with a player that gifted.
You know, I was trying to think. I've heard him compared to Steph Curry from his college career. I was just trying to think in the Big 12 of guys I've seen. And this is, I'm going to say this, I think this is an inadequate comparison because I'm not saying he's as good or this guy was as good as Trae Young is. But the last guy I remember in the Big 12 just dominating the basketball for his team like this was DJ Augustine back when he was at Texas, where if they had the ball for 30 seconds in a possession, he was going to have it in his hands for at least 20. And it worked out pretty well for that Texas team. I'm not saying that's a great analogy, but can you think of somebody else in recent college basketball that where the whole offense went through him the way that it does with Trae Young?
You know, here's why it's different than Trae. I mean, you're talking about DJ, and DJ averaged in his sophomore year, the year he was a star, 14 and a half shots and 6 assists.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you're talking about, you know, almost 4 fewer assists per game and then 4 fewer shots per game. And so it's even, you know, it's still
right.
You know what? That's 8 plays fewer a game. That's a significant number to be able to say he did, you know, and he was a terrific college player, and I totally agree with that. But what they're allowing Trey to do is, you know, you have to go back to people like Maravich. I mean, because that's how, you know, and he's not quite, you know, I don't think he dominates the ball and the scoring to the level that Maravich did. But you have to go back to people like that are dictating so much that nearly everything that happens on the floor offensively for Oklahoma is as a result of him. And it's, you know, it's really, you know, unless you go to a Curry, and you know, when Curry was playing at Davidson, the difference was he was almost purely a scorer. Now his junior year, he became a point guard because Jason Richard graduated. And so he became more of a point guard, and at that point he was kind of the guy that that Trey is now. But not as many people watch that guy. I mean, he was on national TV a bunch early because they'd had the great run in 08. But then he went back into the Southern Conference, and very few people got to see him play. So most people remember the Curry that played in the 08 tournament. Obviously, KU fans remember that guy. And that guy was more a shooting guard, and although he had great passing ability, did more, you know, in the way of getting his own offense than what you're seeing with Trey now.
So is he the best freshman in the country, or is Marvin Bagley or someone else?
Well, you know, I think it depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about who's going to go the highest in the draft, and that seems to be everybody's focus now, he will not. Although I hope he goes high when he leaves, because I hope that people don't look at him and say, you know, he's only 180 pounds or whatever he is, and he's too small. And I hope they realize that he's a special talent. But as far as college basketball is concerned, you can't average 28 points a game and 10 assists and not be the best guy. You know, he's the best player in the country right now, the most dominant player in the country. There are great talents in his class and others. I mean, Miles Bridges is a great talent and a great player. And Alonzo Trier is back to being a great player at Arizona. And the two guys you mentioned are spectacular, DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley. Those guys are great. But there's nobody doing what Trae Young is doing right now.
I'll tell you what, we saw a guy who's also a freshman in a loss against Kansas last Friday do some pretty amazing things. He ended up two blocks away from a triple-double, and that's Mo Bamba. And then he went out against Iowa State, had 10 points, 16 rebounds, and four blocks. How special is that kid?
Well, he's an extraordinarily gifted physically. He's extraordinarily gifted physically because he has such great length and he's off his feet so quick. And he's a really bright kid too. So I think he maybe is starting to figure out how to fit his game into college basketball. I mean, that was his problem early in the year, was trying to figure out what he does well. How does it translate to college basketball? And he's gotten a lot of blocks from the very beginning of the season. I mean, he's averaging 4.5 a game, and he's made a big difference in that respect. But he's not always been able to hang in offensively and make a difference. And I think that he's starting to figure that out. He obviously did a great job of that against KU, and continued that to an extent against Iowa State. And I think they're playing better basketball as they start to realize what he's capable of doing. Being able to get him more near the bucket, get him the ball closer to the bucket, and make a difference that way. He's taking fewer threes now because it's clearly not a part of his game that he's ready to excel at. And as he takes fewer, I think that the quality of them is going up. And he's able to be more effective with what he does do on the perimeter, and then they get him more closer to the basket more often, and he's able to be successful there.
We're visiting with Mike DeCourcy. Mike, the Kansas Jayhawks tonight have an interesting matchup. They're taking on a top 25-ranked Texas Tech team. It's at Allen Fieldhouse. I was looking at some of the breakdowns, and Texas Tech is averaging a larger margin of victory per game than Kansas is. Bill Self says it will be the best defensive team the Jayhawks will have played this year. Can you tell me a little, and Texas Tech, I mean, they took care of Baylor over the weekend. They jumped out to a big lead. They never looked back in that game. Tell me about the challenge in front of Kansas in this Texas Tech team tonight at Allen Fieldhouse.
Well, Texas Tech has played as well as just about anybody this year. The difference being that, you know, they've only played four high major teams. And so the question was entering the Baylor game, how well would they respond to every night in the Big 12? And I think that's something that, you know, obviously the first night they never even let Baylor in that game. They didn't give anybody a chance. And Baylor, you know, that was a tough matchup for Baylor because they just, at this point, I don't think Baylor's backcourt has been as effective as they've wanted it to be. And Texas Tech does a great job of attacking the basketball, forces a lot of turnovers, makes it really difficult to run your offense. And I think that that's something, you know, KU is going to have, you know, it's going to be an interesting challenge because it's kind of KU's strength, you know, the backcourt play that they have, the ability to dictate with that, the ability to stretch opposing defenses and either, you know, get open shots for Svee or get the ball to the rim. It's Svee and Malik both, or get the ball to the rim and convert there. You know, I think it's a fascinating matchup between the two of them because of that. And, you know, we'll see how, you know, again, Texas Tech's real, you know, their real measure over the course of 18 Big 12 games is going to be, can they be great offensively? Great enough offensively to beat the best teams, not just to, you know, to take apart a Baylor and win, but also to be able to play and score effectively when you're not always taking the ball away and turning it into fast break buckets.
Mike, I want to ask you quickly about Kansas State. They opened up league play with a win at Iowa State. By the way, Iowa State's already 0-2 with two home losses in the league. And then Kansas State lost a hard-fought game to West Virginia at home 77-69 last night. What do you make of this Kansas State team? Is there 1-1 to start off Big 12 play?
Yeah, it was interesting that you used the choice of the words hard fought, because I didn't think they competed in that game the way they needed to. You know, I thought that that they allowed West Virginia to come into their gym and dictate the game from the very beginning, and I was surprised that maybe it was a little bit of a culture shock to get, you know, to get that physical defense in your face right away. But after you recover from the initial, okay, this is how the game is, this is how it's going to be played, this is how it's going to be called, you got to start to make it your home again. And I didn't think that K-State ever did that. I thought that they didn't get the ball deep enough to Dean Wade on enough occasions. I thought they stranded him too many times. I thought they took too many challenged shots. I thought when they allowed West Virginia to bounce the basketball and to get the ball into the lane, instead of bodying up and staying big, they reached and lunged and fouled. I just didn't think that there was a compete level in that game from a home team coming off a nice road win, two nice road wins. I thought that they would be stronger in that game. And that's the kind of thing that you can't let happen because you're a home team. I think we talked about this last week. You know, in conference play to make the tournament, you've got to win your home games. And I didn't think that K-State went at that game, especially the guards with the emphasis that was necessary to play winning basketball.
Well, I certainly agree with you in terms of the physicality of that game. And I thought to myself, because I was texting with some buddies of mine that are K-State fans during the game, I think West Virginia themselves only shot one free throw in the first half. And I thought to myself, this is exactly how Bob Huggins wants it. Even if the refs are consistent about it, if they allow for more physical play, that's advantage West Virginia. And that actually made me think of a tweet I think I saw from you this weekend, which was about freedom of movement across the board. Because while I thought they allowed that to be a very physical game, for the most part this weekend, I saw a lot of open basketball and a lot of scores in the 80s and 90s, which is where they want it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely true. I don't think they want to take away from I don't think they want the game to be one way. I think they still want variety in the game. But I think that they don't want teams to be allowed to play with their hands. And honestly, I didn't think that West Virginia did for the most part. I think there were occasions when they did and maybe got clear on that. But if you watched K-State, when they got driven on, they'd allow the basketball to get deep on them, and then they'd reach, you know. And I thought that, you know, that in particular, some second half fouls by Cartier Diarra, it was a different kind of game for a freshman. You're playing against veteran guards who've been around, who know the tricks and all that sort of stuff. And I thought that, you know, in that sense, that there were a couple of fouls that he committed. They were from being kind of worn down, not physically, but mentally, by the way the game was being played. And, you know, I thought that Barry Brown at times did the same. And Kamal Stokes, I mean, 0 for 10 from the field. Your starting backcourt is 5 for 23 from the field. And, you know, 11 of those misses are from three-point range. And the reason they were missing shots is because, for the most part, they were taking shots that were out of the flow of what they want to do. And West Virginia does that to you some by pressing, and even if they don't take it from you, they shorten your shot clock time and they make it hard for you to enter your offense. But I didn't think that K-State responded well to the way that that game was being played and being called. And there's a lot of different ways that you can handle that. I mean, if you think the game is too physical, take a tech maybe, to try to get the game called a different way. That's a tactic. The other tactic is to play physically yourself. But playing physically yourself is not, allowing the ball to get into the lane and then reaching and trying to block a shot. You're playing physically yourself is to body a guy and stay in his space, and then when he gets the ball to the lane, he's got to shoot the ball over you. I didn't think that K-State did that very well.
Mike, let's move on to the Missouri Tigers, who open up SEC play tomorrow night on ESPN2, an 8 o'clock game at South Carolina. Now, this is not the same South Carolina team that went to the Final Four, I don't believe. They're 9-4 to start off the season and 0-1 in SEC play. So what kind of a challenge will the Tigers be walking into when they go to South Carolina?
Well, I think the interesting thing about the challenge is how much time the Tigers have had off.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think it would be a great thing if they were at home, because you're off all that time, and then you come back and you get the crowd behind you and all that. To shake off that much rust and then go on the road it will be an interesting challenge, because there's only going to be 12 people on your side. It may not be a tough crowd to play against. We'll see about that, because this has not been a great team. Maybe they'll try to get people to come by telling that the bowl victory people will be there and they can hold the trophy up at halftime or whatever. But you're right. It's a different South Carolina team. Chris Silva still around. Mike Koster is still around, but no one else for the most part that made the Final Four. It's a much different team. But I will be interested to see if Mizzou can be a different team than they were for the first 30 minutes or so of the Illinois game, the Bragging Rights game. They have to be obviously better than they were that day. South Carolina is not the team that made the Final Four. They're not a great team, but neither is at this point Illinois. And Tigers played so badly for the first 30 or so of that game that they ended up losing.
All right, Mike, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. And maybe next week when we talk to you, we'll be talking about a Chiefs-Steelers matchup in the playoffs. It's possible.
That could happen, I guess. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, take care, Mike.
All right, thank you.
And that is Mike DeCourcy. Hey, if the Bills beat the Jags and the Chiefs beat the Titans, that would be what we're looking at. I don't love the Bills' chances in that game, but anything's possible. The Jags don't exactly look convincing right now, so we shall see.
Sam asked earlier if the Patriots have ever lost twice to the same team at home in the same year.
Yeah.
No.
The answer is no.
The Brady Belichick era, I was looking through.
Yeah.
They've only lost twice to the same team in a season since the Brady Belichick. 2010 to the Jets, once in the regular season and then in the playoffs, but one at home and one away. And 2012 to the Ravens, one at home and one in the playoffs.
So they never lost at home to the same team twice.
Get excited, Kansas
City. I wonder how many times they've actually played a
Not
team
very
at home twice.
It was hard to find the same.
That probably doesn't happen very often, obviously, because it'd have to be in the playoffs. And most likely it'd be somebody in your division. And their division pretty much has stunk the entire time.
Except the Jets a couple years.
Yeah, the Jets had that little run, the Herm Edwards era. All right, by the way, that's the voice of Shane Summers. Hello, Shane.
Hi, guys.
You're taking over for Jason Justice. We will be back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.